Hello. Welcome to Blacter. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacter. I'm your host, Gabe Moses, and today I am here with actor and playwright Paris Creighton III. How's it going, Paris?
It's going pretty good. Thanks for having me on, Gabe.
Absolutely. And joining us is actor, director, artivist, the list goes on, Mr. Khalif Troy. How's it going, Khalif?
Hey, hey, hey. What's going on, Gabe? I am happy to be here. All is well.
Awesome. Now, if you are listening to this episode, you should know that I just wrapped up a Zoom production with these two gentlemen. This was a production with two one-act plays called Chains and Broken, which were produced by DeSales University's Act One Fall Virtual Season. Paris wrote both of these pieces, and Khalif directed them, and I played the role of Emmett in Chains. We'll probably get to talking about these shows in a bit later, but first, let's get to know the two of you. So, Paris, we'll start with you. Would you like to just give us a brief, you know, biography of where you're from, where you attended school, and what made you dedicate your life to the arts?
Sure. I'm born and raised from St. Louis, Missouri. I dedicated my life to the arts pretty young. It was actually my kindergarten graduation when I fell in love with the stage, and I fell in love with everything about it. Just growing up, I've always been a storyteller, and you know, I love anything relating to storytelling and performing. So after high school, I went to Brooks College in Long Beach, California. And after that, I attended Act One Conservatory in Chicago. And from there, I've been producing plays and writing plays for the past 15 years. Telling my age a little bit.
It's quite all right. Awesome. Yeah. And how about you, Khalif?
All right. I am born and raised in Philadelphia, born in Southwest, spent most of my time in North Philly, and now I'm a West Philadelphian by way of living in Minneapolis for 8 years. I went to Temple University for my training, and I was bit by the acting bug fairly early on as well. Going back to when I was about, I want to say 5 or 6, or maybe 5, 6 or 7, I realized that every profession that I said I wanted to do as a kid came back to some form of performance. It actually started off with the idea of wanting to be a wrestler. And then that
changed pretty quickly, huh?
It changed pretty quickly. But then I was really interested in dancing, which a lot of people don't know, I realized. And I would do like little dance competitions and things like that. But that would be like during the summer. During the school year, I would always do like a Black History play. And it wasn't until about fourth grade, so I was about 10 years old, when I really was like, this is something I'm excited about. From that point forward, I kind of did as much as I could, really got into like Black literature. And then once I got to Temple, right before I got to Temple, I had done some plays for my church, grew up in a Baptist church. And I've kind of been going since. And I think what has kept me in the arts, because we all know it's not the money, is how therapeutic it has been, and how much I feel like I can have an impact on myself, my family, my community, and my generation, and maybe generations before and generations after.
Awesome. Thank you both for that little introduction to yourselves. So, okay, so let's start with Paris. Do you want to talk about your inspiration for writing and what started it, and how do you come up with ideas for stories and the characters in them?
Well, like I said, I've always been a storyteller. So even before I can remember, I was always drawn to stories and characters. I think a lot of it comes from I was an only kid for a long time, so I had to find ways to, you know, to entertain myself, and it was always I would always create stories with my toys and with my teddy bears, and just have beginning, middle, and ends, have full plots. Those were some of the best times in life, back when my imagination was more full. I realize now that my inspiration often comes from things that I don't understand, or things are things that hurt, you know. When something hurts me, I heal myself through writing, you know. I'm sure we'll talk more about what's going on in the country later, but
Yes.
anytime something that like affects me in a deep way, I write to try to heal myself. So, you know, it works. It's very therapeutic.
Nice. And Khalif, can you discuss your journey to becoming a director? Because you've started out as an actor, so what inspired you to branch out of, just acting?
Ah, that's a really good question. It actually kind of started when I was an undergrad at Temple University. I came into the program thinking I was going to, do all these great things, but I really wanted to be an actor. And so I had a hard time in the early going of my time at Temple University with understanding the art of acting, the craft of it, understanding who I was and what I could bring and how meaningful that could be. Because all I could feel at the time, and I don't think this is a fault of anyone in particular, but I just didn't feel worthy enough or ready enough for acting. But I kept working really, really hard at it. And then it wasn't until later in my career at Temple where I was beginning to be cast for things, and it was a lot of fun. But what changed it for me was having to do, other things in the theater. Like if you're not cast in something, and Gabe, I know you know this very well because our programs are very similar, I learned that, if you don't do one thing, then something else becomes available to you. And for the first 3 or 4 years, Temple did not have a directing track. And I at that point, because I wanted to tell stories, and I wanted to act and they weren't casting me, I would get together with friends and we would co-write, co-produce, and co-direct our own work. So my track to directing started, we could say at that point, because every time I had an opportunity to direct or co-direct something, it was actually fairly successful. And I think my excitement around it is being able to tell a story from just a different position. It's like if, you play a game and you switch your position if you can, no matter what that sport is, if you can switch a position, it's interesting. It changes things for you. And in my particular case, I advocated hard for myself and others. And then Temple did start to pick up a directing track. So I took intro to acting and then director's art. And I started to think about the art of directing and just how hard it was and a lot of aspects that I hadn't thought about. And I rose to the challenge and was really excited about it. I think being able to sit and guide the idea of a show in the most appropriate way possible really excites me. And that's what made me branch out and kind of stay branched out with directing as opposed to acting, which I still do. I still do when they cast me, but
I have a question, Gabe,
Sure.
that kind of leads to that. Khalif, if 'cause I think about this often. If you could only choose one, if whether it be acting or directing, what do you think you would choose?
Oh. Oh, that's hard. I think I would choose acting, because it's a different sort of therapeutic release. I love jumping into a role, and if I'm feeling the weight of the world, I can jump into it a little bit differently, and it feels far more healing than the role of director. So at this point in my life, I would say acting, but don't be surprised if that were to change in the next 10 or 15
Which it
years.
probably will, because mine has definitely changed over the years.
And I know, like, from a director's perspective too, like, even from like the small projects I've done, like being a director is very exhausting because it's like you're almost playing all the characters because you have to look at them like as if, they're each individual part of the show. So there's almost something more that's tiring about just being a director versus focusing on one character when you're an actor.
Oh, you are absolutely right about that, Gabe. I can't even begin to tell you. And we'll probably get into this a little bit, but like, as a director, I've been fortunate enough to choose the work that I want to do. I don't just do anything for the sake of directing. And that's a part of, I think, of what it means to be an artist. But like, I've chosen some difficult work as a director, and jumping into every role is absolutely the case. And being able to step out of it to be the audience is also a part of it. So, so yeah, it's extremely exhausting in a different way than acting.
Definitely. Yeah. I think you're more in control of every aspect of the storytelling, because I think for me now, I would choose directing over anything else, even writing, just because I love it. I love it so much. And that started when I was a kid too. I used to get my family and write Christmas plays, and I would direct them. And you know, I still have a feeling as an adult of directing. It just fills me with so much passion. You know,
yeah,
Paris, absolutely. That's so dope to hear. I love to hear that.
Right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So, Khalif, real quick, you had brought up. Well, I also brought up you the fact that you're an artivist. So, if you want to further explain that, what that means to you, and how you came up with that term?
Yes. So I can't say that it's a term that I came up with. I think I heard one or two other artivists say this. I want to say sometime last year or 2 years ago. And it wasn't an incredibly popular term, but in no uncertain terms, it literally means artist and activist.
Is that what it means? Been
No way.
But listen, y'all, look, let me tell you now, okay? Now, I had a brief side note. I had a really cool acting instructor over the summer. And she, a black woman, super dope, really talented, learned a lot from her. When she gave us an assignment, and when I responded, she was like, artivist, what is that? And I was like, word? You don't know what an artivist is? Okay. Let me learn you something real quick. And she didn't know. She was like, I love that. And she said that she was struggling through the pandemic of racism that happened during the pandemic of COVID-19, of how to live her life safely and continue the work of, you know, being an activist in her own right. Mm-hmm. And she said, I like the idea of artivism. Which I told her, and which I'll tell you guys, is for me is, you know, obviously putting your work as an artist into the field of activism. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I want to relentlessly pursue activism through the art, because that is a community. It's a culture. It's literally something that will speak to so many different generations. Mm-hmm. Like when you go to a protest, depending on the protest and depending on what you're protesting, you're affecting a whole society. I wholeheartedly believe that. And it's the same thing with the art. So the artivist is to simply say, what you're getting from me as an artist is this particular line of things, where if you hire me as an actor, I'm going to have commentary on what it is that we're doing. If you hire me as a director, I'm going to have commentary and final say on what it is that we're doing. And I'll do so respectfully, but I want to make sure that the work has the integrity that it needs and that is impactful. So yeah, that's what it means for me to be an artivist.
Yeah, yeah. Great. And so I don't even think I know the answer to this next question. But I wanted to talk about how the both of you met each other and what were, you know, some previous projects you had worked on together before Chains and Broken.
Khalif, when did we meet? It wasn't First Deep Breath. It was before that, wasn't it?
I think it was before that. I feel like it was clearly in New York, and it was. Did we go? Was there a reading? I think there was a reading.
So we'll just say we met at a theater event, because I'm sure that's how we met.
Yeah.
That's how I meet most of the people in my life. You know, I meet them at theater events. Yeah. Theater, we did that. And the first time we worked together was this summer. Well, it was kind of spring when I did the Something Sweet plays.
Mm-hmm.
During the beginning of the pandemic, I started to write 10-minute, a virtual series of 10-minute works. And Khalif was in the last one that I produced. And yeah, so after that, Khalif came, and I think you saw a clip of Chains and Broken. Khalif, how did that?
I did.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I was looking for a different kind of work again due to the pandemic, and because of how I was feeling, and I was feeling really raw and really visceral. And I felt like there's communities that's going to need something other than what we were planning to do, in addition to some other factors. But I saw a clip of Chains and Broken on Paris's website, and I was intrigued instantly, and the rest is history.
Yeah. History in the making.
Yes.
And so now, do you guys want to talk about what the collaboration process is like between a playwright and a director? Paris, do you want to take this one first?
Sure. I mean, it's different with depending on the playwright and the director, right? Because you have certain playwrights who are very, very, very protective of their words, which they should be, but it's to the point to where they're unmoving. You know, they won't budge. It's like, it's this way and that's it. I'm more lenient in that. And I think it's because of my years of acting training and just because I'm an actor, director, and writer. Mm-hmm. So I'm more lenient. It's more of a, I like the process of collaborating more. You know, I write the play, but once I'm with the director and we're looking over the play, if the director says, hey, you know, maybe we can try it this way, I'm always open, you know, to like, sure, you know, let's go with that. And working with Khalif was a joy because, you know, he knows his stuff. So I could just sit back and I'm, you know, just be the writer. Sometimes you work with someone and you have to kind of step up and sort of co-direct, which I don't like to do. I like the director you know, to take, you know, that's the director's job. So, and, you know, I was just there, unless if Khalif needed me, I was there. But, you know, he had it. Khalif had it.
Yeah, and I would, first of all, thank you for that, Paris. And I can't thank you enough for being available, being in a room, and really blessing us with your spirit, because it truly made a difference in the times that you were there, in all the great ways. Like, I just loved it. And I think, and not to speak for everyone, since Gabe is here too, he can speak to it too, but like, there was always a shift on everybody's face. There was always this extra level of like, okay, cool. All right, Paris is here. Great. And, you know, the job was getting done when Paris was like, okay, well, now I gotta go. This is heavy. It was always really, really nice. But I think to piggyback off of what Paris is saying too, it does depend on the director and the playwright, because certain playwrights are really a stickler for their words, and sometimes playwrights want to be directors, you know, but if the opportunity doesn't present, they see an opportunity with their own work to kind of direct it, but through whatever powers that be, a director has been hired. So sometimes it can get difficult in that way, but more often than not, with me, I'm a collaborative director. I believe in the collaborative art of directing to a point. There will come a point where I'm like, all right, we're at this point in the process. Now I just have to shut this down and go to the next phase. But I think that the tandem has to be one of like, you have to enjoy the person, and I thoroughly enjoy Paris. Even as a director, when we did Chocolate Dreams, it was my first time doing a Zoom play, because it was so new, and it still is, but it was incredibly new then, and Paris had already had this written work prior, and I was such a dork that I loved it so much that I literally took notes. I don't even know if you remember this, Paris.
I
took notes. I took notes on the series, and I just simply had questions before he even asked me to come on. I just had questions. I was like, ooh, and this character, are they related to this character? And, oh, this is such and such. I drew like a whole tree and everything. I was like, why am I sitting here doing this kind of work on this man's work? I just enjoyed it so much. And that's kind of like what I do with TV sometimes too. So with that, I was like, okay, I know I'm going to want to work with Paris again. And I was like, as an actor, I was like, I hope I'm giving him what he wants, because this is hard stuff to work over Zoom in this kind of way. But as a director, I was like, oh, I like the way he guided us. I like the way he guided everyone prior to me getting on board. And to be the writer and the director, can sometimes be challenging and pigeonholing. Like some people, because they wrote the work, they can't see outside of it enough. They just are like, all right, here's where I want to go. And I can't really take notes because I wrote it. But that's not right. That's not Paris at all. And the flexibility around that is helpful. So I think in general, when directors and writers are working together, you have to, there has to be a level of flexibility with both parties in order to get what it is that they need, because there's also, you know, the producer who's trying to get something out of the process as well. So, I think that, did I answer the question?
Yes, sir, you did.
Okay.
Yeah. And I want to second what you said about whenever Paris would come into our, you know, Zoom room, just the energy would just go up 2-3 notches and we'd be, you know, giving it the best we could. And that's a testament to just the admiration we had for Paris and his work and his words and the fact that we wanted to honor them and do them justice. So, yeah, thank you. Paris,
for being you. You all did amazing work.
All right. And so, Khalif, you had brought up the fact that, you know, obviously directing over Zoom is a much more difficult challenge than, you know, just how we usually do things. So do both of you want to speak to how Zoom is like a different way of communicating through art? And even though it's not technically theater, but how do we get theater out of Zoom from both a writer, director's perspective and an actor's perspective?
I think we miss theater so much, so we just call it theater, but it's definitely not. It's definitely not theater.
Right.
It's film, you know, this is what it is. And I think for me, as a person who often likes to think and write outside of the box, and now with Zoom, we have to everything has to be focused inside of the box. So it's kind of cool in that aspect of I'm always trying to think of something that no one else has thought of, even in this platform, because you can have a lot of fun. It is limiting, but you can still have a lot of fun. For instance, there the play that Khalif was in with another brilliant friend of mine, Monique. Their play was a first date over Zoom.
Yeah,
and it was just cool to watch these two characters connect over, you know, over Zoom. They were having a dinner date, but you know it was virtual, and they danced together, and it was just cool to see that you actually felt the emotion within this very very short scene. So it was fun in that way to like play around with it. But you know, I am ready to get back on the stage.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say similarly. Like I want to believe, and again, this is probably to your point, Paris, about just missing the stage, which I didn't know I missed that much. And I'll say what that means is, like, I had been doing, as an actor, I've been doing a lot of like on camera work in the last like 2 years with like industrial videos and commercials. And I hadn't really been on stage, but I missed it. But I kept telling myself, like, it's a time commitment that I just don't have, you know, being a father and, you know, the price point and things like that. When you get a little older, you have to think about these things. But I did miss it. Theater is always where my heart's going to be. And I want, because of that, I want Zoom to be a hybrid of theater in some way. But ultimately, I think it is film. And I think the challenge as a director, to make sure I answer this question, is when you have theater actors who are trained to project, who are trained to be large, when you have that and you have to fit it into a box, then you have to think outside of the box to get them in the box appropriately. You know what I mean? And there could be moments where you're so large that it almost looks like animated and cartoonish, and I've seen, and I, as a director, you have to kind of, like, if you're going to do Zoom stuff, you have to look at what your contemporaries are doing. And I saw some really great work over the summer, and I saw some stuff where I was just like, okay, they tried, and you know what, I can't fault them for what didn't resonate because we're all learning as we go. So everything was about a learning curve. But I think that the challenge is to, you know, get everybody to like fit and to be kind of on one accord inside of a box. But you do have to think outside of the box to do it. And Gabe, I think I told you this too, when I saw you in another production, Midsummer, I thought that that was done really, really well. Another challenge to Zoom theater, or the hybrid of, or the thought of, you know, Zoom and theater is, you know, you do have to have a camera set up. You have to make sure that your audio is right. You have to make sure your lighting is right. And that makes it film-esque, but we do the same thing in theater. Like if you're in a large house and you have a wireless mic, you do a mic check on stage. If you have a fight call on stage and you have something physical that you have to do over a screen and people aren't in the same room because of COVID, then you also have to kind of do that as a fight call as well to make sure that it's registering and that it's not cheesy looking. And so those are the challenges of that I can think of offhand that makes it hard for Zoom theater from a directing standpoint, is that you have all these key factors. And if one person doesn't have that, because I also directed a play over the summer called Unapologetically Black, and it was the first time I jumped in to the Zoom sphere, and I was like, oh, this is going to be tough. And those two out of three of those shows are live. So I think I mentioned before to you, Gabe, that it felt like theater because when the Wi-Fi went out on one of our main actors, the other two that was on screen at that time, they had to carry it and they had to figure out within the world that they were in. And it was a zany world to be in. How they were going to cover until our main character came back with the Wi-Fi, and it worked out beautifully. People loved it. I sweat bullets. I was scared. Like I was that direct in the audience. Like, oh my gosh, what is happening from a screen in my room? It's things like that that makes me excited and I'm exhilarated for it. But all in all, Paris is right. I would love to just get back in the theater.
I agree too. And like from the beginning of this whole pandemic too, just the thought of doing Zoom theater was always weird to me, and I never thought that it would go on for this long and I would learn so much from it, you know. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. So for Paris, can you talk about the work that goes into bringing real life events to the page and how much you fictionalize characters and plot, if you do at all?
I do fictionalize character and plot sometimes. I think, especially over the past, I'll say 10 or so years, my heart has been so heavy about what's going on in America. And just being a Black man, it feels like I can't escape these stories of injustice. And it's been difficult. Like I said earlier, I'm trying to recapture the imagination that I once had, because when I was a kid, I would write about dragons and seals getting lost in the ocean and you know, all of these fantastical things. And it feels like now my scope has been sort of limited, and that comes with growing up as well. You know, adulting, you kind of lose your you don't lose it, but you forget about the essence that you had as a kid, you know. So I'm trying to regain that. But basically, most of my plays lately have been driven. It's been family driven, you know, like what's going on in the world today has been talking about, you know, how we feel as Black people, Black men and Black women, living in America, you know. So, but I'm tired of that narrative, you know. So my next plays will be more, I want to play with magic, and I want to talk more about our joy. You know, I always find our joy even in the darkest moments, but I want to just uplift the joy that we that we have as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. For Khalif, as a director, how do you work a rehearsal room when tackling a play with heavy content like Chains and Broken?
I didn't know how I was going to do it, but in the process of, I have a practice for myself where I really try to, and Paris is really good about reminding me of this, of like, you know, taking care of my heart and my spirit. Mm. And so I do that by making sure that I have joy around me. I have love around me. I can veg out and look at senseless things happening in our society that some people may take seriously, but I'm like, oh, this is just fun. I like to get into like my ratchet side every now and again. So I do that as a part of the joy, so that when I come into the rehearsal room, I come in bright, I come in light, I come in ready to do the work from a technical standpoint, and also just checking in, making sure that my mind, body, and spirit is good, and making sure that the mind, body, and spirit of the performers, the artists, are also good. And if they're not good, what can we do to make sure that you're going to be at least okay or safe in this space? And it's a lot of like talking about like whatever that self-care is for each individual. I know I talked about, you know, like, you know, stay hydrated, stay safe because we're in COVID. And, you know, when it comes to racism, because that's what, you know, in some ways, both of these plays definitely touched on. Just knowing that where it's out in the world, and this is technically supposed to be the escape. So if this is the escape, as best you can, how can you go as far as you can in this world that we know represents real life, but is fictional for our purposes? Because for me as an artist, that's therapeutic. Like if I can't escape it, if I've been cast, if I'll audition for something and I'm in it, cool. As a director, I'm like, I chose to do this work because I know the larger implications that it could have on society. But to make sure that people are like, you know, caring for themselves, is kind of how I try to approach it and try to keep it light. You know, I'll have jokes about the most interesting things just to keep it light. So I'm always looking for levity in the room when I'm working on this kind of work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate it. Like every single day, literally, like you would check in on us as actors and ask how we were doing before we even approached the work, which was, you know, very, I've never had that any director do that. And I think that's just a testament to you. And also the fact that, you know, you understand as, you know, a Black director, as a Black actor, how we feel as young actors, young Black actors in an educational setting, and how, you know, especially during these trying times, how that can just fuel everything that we're doing without a second thought.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, I remember being, you know, a young Black actor. And honestly, I've never had that kind of care from a director either. So I'm constantly pushing to be the change that I want to see. And I know it's like trite or cliche, but it's legitimately what I want for myself and the world around me. So I'm really, really happy that resonated and that it made a difference. Like it really, I could get emotional talking about it because Black men don't get to be radically joyful, softer. Mm. We don't have a position in society where it's readily available for us to be. And I wanted to let y'all know that you can be. This is the space to do it. And if there's a radical change for you all because of it, fantastic. You take that radical change and you push the envelope in your next process.
Absolutely. Yeah, so how do each of you step away from the material as yourselves, as a director, as a writer, as an actor, and take breaks when you find yourself getting too emotional in and out of the rehearsal space?
You said, how do we step away?
Yes. What do you do?
Pretty much that. I step away. You know, I just let it go for a while. I know for me, I often like to live in this happy bubble or this positive bubble, even living in, you know, the state we're living in. I'm always trying to find joy in every moment. So I spend a lot of my time, you know, I really believe that there's good in all people. You know what I mean? But when I sit down to focus on writing, I allow myself to have all of those emotions that I kind of sort of block, which is not good. And I realize that now. So just as an adult now, I'm learning to allow myself to feel the anger and feel the hurt and feel it and then move on from it. You know what I mean? Not to stay there. But in terms of writing, I often allow myself to get to the brink, writing Chains, and especially writing Broken. I was definitely broken as I was writing it. It was the hardest play I think that I've ever written in my life, because I cried the entire time while I was writing it, because I was just releasing so much of not only my pain, but the pain that I saw when I did my research of these women who had lost their children. I felt that, and I internalized that pain. And I can never make someone feel what they are feeling, but I do want you to come close. You know what I mean? When you're doing this work, you can't touch people unless you're first touched. So I always allow myself to feel that in the process of writing. But like you said, I just take myself out when I need to, because it's very important, because art can be extremely dangerous. So I find ways to take myself out and like Khalif said, explore the ratchet side. And just, I go down sometimes I go down the YouTube tunnel, and I'm when I don't want to hear much about what's going on in America, I watch cats being afraid of cucumbers, and it's like, all right, this is my joy for the moment, and I'm gonna live in this,
That's great.
That's great. I wasn't ready. I'm sorry. I guess, yeah, similarly, I'm so glad he said that. Similarly, there were days where, if I had the opportunity, and my daughter's here, we do something very different. I step away by just pouring all of the love and the joy that I have into her. And that's an easy way for me to just close the script, close the computer screen, and just walk away. Though I have an interesting diet as of late because things are stressful, but I have, from the Something Sweet plays forward, have been divulging in Something Sweet every chance that I get. So, if it's not like I had Jamaican rum cake last night.
Okay, we don't have to go into
Ooh.
details about.
Yeah, I was gonna say. All right, all right,
My goodness.
Yeah. I'll get something sweet because that had a huge impact on me. The idea of needing something sweet throughout this process that we were in this pandemic at the time. I was like, okay, that's something. I also there's this chocolate wine that I like that Paris is all too familiar with because I used it in I used it in the play. And I'll have a glass of that. But I'll tell you, away from those two things, the thing that I've been kind of going down the rabbit hole on, and it's on Facebook Watch. I've been looking at The Rock and Stone Cold in the old days of the WWF. And
Oh,
it has been giving me so much joy and so much life to watch just how they contrived and executed these storylines, these soap opera storylines. There was a moment where the WWF was more dialogue and less wrestling. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, yo, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I'm so glad that he came into the space that he is in now, with the kind of person that he is. But his time during the WWF was impactful as all get out. And I did not like him when I was younger. So, and that's a different commentary that I can talk about too, because it's, the WWF is obviously run by Vince McMahon and the McMahons or whatever. And the way they set their storylines, as an adult, I look back at them and I'm like, wow, the racial insensitivity. the play into so many different tropes. But I can go back on it, enjoy it, and just be like, this is kind of what I'm vegging out to. And that's what I've been doing. Like, I think like the last week of Chains Broken has just been Stone Cold versus The Rock and whoever else got in their way, Undertaker and all these other guys. So I've enjoyed that thoroughly. Oh, yeah. And then music. I have been getting into different musical sounds just to kind of like as my meditation as I wind down before bed. So that's how I walk away from it.
And cucumbers. Awesome,
yeah. And our parents are also really...
But nothing beats... nothing beats cucumbers.
Every day. Every day. Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, Paris. I know you're also really big on music and musical theater as well. So, do you want to talk to how that has been therapeutic?
Oh
for
yeah,
you?
Musical theater is that's my first love. I think one of my earliest memories is my dad putting me in front of the television and showing me Heaven with Little Shop of Horrors. It's like, oh, what is this? So at a young age, I've been a big musical theater kid. And I truly believe if you like start your day with music, it's kind of hard to be in a bad mood. Music just it takes you, unless the music you're listening to is putting you in a bad mood, like Adele.
Right.
I love Adele, but Adele would make you want to go and jump off a building. But,
all the way around.
But yeah, but especially musical theater is like, it's very difficult to be in a bad mood when you're listening to Dear Evan Hansen or Hamilton or anything like that. Recently, my music of choice has been J. Cole, because I'm a huge Kendrick fan. I've been getting into debates with people who like J. Cole better. So I'm like, all right, let me give this guy a chance. I really like J. Cole, but you know, there's only one Kendrick.
I'm just going to chime in and say there's only one J. Cole as well.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Oh. But I hear you, Paris. I love them both too. I got into J. Cole before Kendrick. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to that, but
I'll convert you. Don't worry. I'll bring you to the light.
Slide a few albums.
Yeah, I mean, and I've listened to a couple of Kendrick's joints, and I do appreciate him greatly. But there's something about J. Cole that, For Your Eyes Only, is the one album that I continue to listen to.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. I get so much out of it every time. It's a beautiful album. It's a classic album.
Yeah. Side note, I don't know if either of you are like actually into podcasts, like if you listen to them, but there's this one that I listen to. It's called Dissect, and basically, you know that? Yeah. There's two of the seasons are dedicated to two of Kendrick Lamar's albums. Mm-hmm. And
I need to get into that.
Yeah, there's someone, he has an episode, season on Beyonce, Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, he is great.
He's great.
Definitely writing that one down.
Yeah. All right. So next question. So during our rehearsal process for Chains and Broken, it felt like each day there was something new going on in the world that somehow impacted our work, whether it was the passing of Chadwick Boseman or the shooting of Jacob Blake. It was just difficult to ignore all of those things. So what do each of you have to say to young artists, or to anyone really, who find themselves struggling to produce art in the midst of these tragic events?
It will always be a struggle, no matter, you know, and that has nothing to do with age. It's always going to be a struggle to release mm-hmm. your art, produce your art, to go through your art. 'Cause the same thing happened. The reason I wrote this play is the exact same thing that happened during your rehearsal process. I wrote the play after a Trayvon Martin protest. And when I produced the play, Chains and Broken, Michael Brown happened in Ferguson, Missouri, which where I'm from. So it's just, it lights this fire under you that, you know, the work is important, although I'm so tired of telling these stories, you know, but when things like that happen in the world, it makes me know that, you know, what we're doing is impactful and what we're doing is needed, you know, because art heals, you know. So unfortunately we have stories based around, you know, what is happening in the world, but if we can do it in a way that's healing and impactful, you know, I'll never stop.
Agreed. I think along those same lines, like Paris was saying, it's always going to be hard to share your art. And I think that when you are Black in America, things can happen on a grand scale, like the Jacob Blake incident or the passing of Chadwick Boseman, which both incredibly painful things, and for two different reasons, right? Like, wow.
Yeah.
There's so much going on around that. I feel like there's always going to be something, and that's something does influence the work for a lot of us. Some of us, we choose not to. We choose, I'm going to do this musical. I'm going to try to get in Dear Evan Hansen. You know, like, I'm going to do something very different. But for those of us who can't unwatch or take a step back in moments, I would say, you know, use it. Whatever you feel, to any artist, whatever you feel, when you hear a story like Chadwick, and I just saw that, I forget the co-star, but he... I heard that he took a pay cut so that this woman could be paid fairly. Huge things like that. And you look at that, and then you look at the flip side of our industry where people started to, like, you know, give little murmurs about how they thought he might have been difficult to work with. Black Panther got to his head because he had somebody massaging his feet, and he had his wife, or I guess it was fiance, then wife, you know, by his side on set. And you never know what someone's going through before you start speaking on what it is that you think you see. So those polar opposite things are so impactful. And the older I get, because, you know, I'm in my early 30s, you know, wink, wink. but like the older I get, the more sensitive I get to these things that are happening. And I'm impacted by the stories, the fight that people have had, and Chadwick's fight, and like, knowing what he knew when Kobe Bryant died. Like, these are the kind of things that really ripped me apart at night, when COVID-19 wasn't, like, the thought of COVID, getting COVID-19 wasn't ripping me apart. It's like, we started this year with the passing of Kobe Bryant, and it's like, wow, so tragically, and his daughter Gianna Bryant, and it rocked me for months. Then here comes this pandemic, and here comes these other things. It's like, if you don't have, if you don't let the industry tell you that if you're just not going to create art, that that's not okay. That would be my commentary. Like, you do what you feel is necessary. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who is, like, singing on Instagram and taking really, really dope photos, like artistic, like, fun photos. And I'm like, if that's your artistic outlet, take it, do it. I have people, friends who are dabbling into, like, music, if that's what they want to do, when they're, like, you know, they're actors, or, you know, they do other things. And it's like, as an artist, you can delve into new ventures for a little bit, or you can absolutely do nothing like I was doing. I was just watching Ozark because everybody was like, you got to watch Ozark. You can do it. You can do something, or you can do nothing. Just don't let yourself feel poorly about what that is for you. Don't let the industry make you feel bad about it, because there's this pressure. Mm-hmm. To create art, you have so much time. It's like, no, how about you create that self-care plan that you've been putting off, you know?
Hello, you said that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how about you put your resiliency plan in place, so that when the world returns to whatever it's going to return to, hopefully it returns, it looks like it already is for some, that you have something more solid in place for yourself. Like, that's also artistic, and that's also beautiful. So that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, great answers. Yeah, so now, as Black men, what is the most difficult part about producing work that may or may not be relatable to an entire
That's
audience?
Not difficult at all for me. So to give you a little background, I've been commissioned to write a play for a theater in Florida, and in the play I had a CP time joke. And the artistic director of the theater said, you know, my husband and I, we were reading it. And, you know, when we got to the CP time, joke, we didn't understand it. And I'm just afraid if you keep it in that that the white audiences they won't understand it, that they'll be taken out of the play to and they're thinking about it. And my response was, I'm like, I
Right.
don't write for white audiences, so I'm not gonna change something
Yeah,
just
yeah.
because, you know, someone won't get it. In the beginning of my writing career, I would write things that was safe. You know, I would always think, you know, my grandmother may see this or my dad may see this. So I didn't even use bad language when I first started writing. But then I got to the point to, you know, I'm a storyteller. I want to tell the story as truthful as possible. And as a black man, I can only tell, you know, what I know. So somebody will get it in the audience. So if and the folks that don't get it, you know, do your research. Kendrick says a lot of things that I have no idea what he's talking about. But guess what? It's the fun part is diving in and learning exactly what it is, you know. So I'm gonna write what comes from my heart, and I really don't focus on who will get it or not.
Yeah, that's a really
Yeah.
good point. I am similarly, and I'm feeling more and more radical, and I'm like, I don't know why people keep hiring me if this is not what they want. But
Yeah,
I am
right.
legitimately and unequivocally, unapologetically black, and it rises up
Right.
in me more and more, and it's been a growing thing since the Trayvon Martin case, because I see myself as him, and I think a lot of us did, even. Then President Obama, you know, he spoke about it and they chided him, said he shouldn't be talking about these kinds of matters. It's like, actually, he should, because before he was president, and before he was president of the Harvard Law Review, he was a black man in America, and he still is. So, but I grow
Yeah.
unapologetically in that. So when it comes to the work and what they don't get, it's always going to be something, because it's not just an audience member. You may have a producer. Just like Paris was saying, who may say, yeah, you know, we really don't get it. It's like, well, it's not for you. American theater, the idea of we see you, American theater, is so impactful because we've been here. Like, we knew what this was, and we're all out here code switching and playing the game and trying to do our best to keep our integrity. And some of us more successful than others in that pursuit. But ranging, we are trying to keep our integrity as best we can. And I've just learned to be unapologetic about it. One day, we'll talk about like notes that I've gotten over the years as a director from white producers that I'm just like, I can't even believe that this was said. But also, we got to remember that even these white producers and these white theater goers, they're coming from a perspective themselves. And I was just talking about this with a neighbor friend of mine. When we talk about the education system in this country, we have to talk about how expansively poor it is, even outside of the idea of what we call a poor education, like a public education, because the schools that are deemed better still doesn't have a curriculum on women's studies. They still don't have a curriculum on African American studies. And if they're not woven in to the larger curriculum of American history, because that's what it all actually is, then we're all are going to be at a disadvantage. At this point in my life, I'm like, we can be at a disadvantage, but if what we disagree on at this disadvantage is going to systematically be rooted in my oppression, then I am not going to engage with you any further artistically. I'm just not going to do it. And I'm probably going to air you out and let you know how I feel about it. If we're at a disadvantage and you're like, well, you know what? I'm really sorry. I need to do the work here and here and here and here. I'm like, fantastic. Go on back and do the work. And let's see where we go. Because these little things that are written in that like what Paris was talking about, CP time, there might be some black folks who don't know. There might be other BIPOC artists that don't know what CP time is. I know that the West Indians have their version of CP time, right? Like, and they're, you know, of color. So it's like we get it, and we take what we have as our specific cultural things, and we can write them and have them for our people who do come to see work, because at the end of the day, our culture is taken. And once they figure out the footnotes to our culture, it's taken, and it looks cooler when they do it, but it's still demeaned when we do it. And it's like, I'm not going to hedge. Yep. Like, if this is what I'm directing, this is the direction I'm going in. I trust this Black actor, male or female, to carry out based on the direction that I've given them. And that's just going to be that. I can't change what I believe this writer has been trying to allude to. You know, now we can talk about humanity, because I do think we have more in common than we have not in common. But also our uniqueness in who we are should be celebrated. It should be acknowledged. It should be seen. And you should, and people who, white folks, I'll just call it what it is, white folks should just be accepting of the fact that not everything is for their consumption. Like, so that's how I do it. I just, I say what I mean and mean what I say. And I sometimes don't say anything and I keep it moving.
White folks have the tendency to always, when they understand something, like I've heard from a lot of white folks with my plays, your plays are so universal. And I'm like, why are we using the term universal just because, you know, you understand? I'm a human, you know, and I'm using the English language. So it's just funny to me that, you know, and I've also had a lot of white people come to me and say, you know, I didn't see the race of the characters because the play was so universal. I'm like, well, that's a problem, you know, because these characters are Black. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't see that, then you're missing, you know, missing the point of the play.
And also they're highlighting where they are in their journey of being human. Because what ultimately what you're saying is, I don't see color. Oh, God, it was so relieving to not see color. Wow. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This idea of colorblind?
Colorblind.
Listen with it. Mm-hmm. You have to see us for who we are. And if you don't, then you got to go back and you got to do the work. Because... Mm-hmm. You walk away mad if you do see a color? Like, I'm confused. Is that the other end of it? Like, I was like, okay, cool. You do that. But we're not here solely for your consumption. And that's, I'll leave it at that. I almost said something. Yeah. I shouldn't say it. But
hey, it's all good. It's all good. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. So what are your favorite representations of Black artists who are primarily writers and or directors, and which of them inspired you?
I think I answered that earlier. Kendrick is like one of my biggest inspirations. I think everything that he touches is golden. He's a fantastic storyteller. When you listen to a Kendrick album, it's more for me. Yeah. It's more of a theatrical experience, and I think that's why I like him so much, because he's very theatrical. You can take one of his albums, and I can take one of his albums, because I may do it one day, and I can turn it into a play or a musical easily. So yeah, for me right now, on that front, Kendrick is top. Also, Michaela Cole. Oh my gosh, Michaela Cole. This woman is. Oh my gosh, I have no words. The way she constructs stories, everything about Michaela Cole is just. I mean, her directing, her acting, her writing, it's just, she's out of this world to me. So those are the two that I'll name now.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to jump on the bandwagon of the Michaela Cole, because I was like, wow. And I was like, is this someone that I can get into right now with the work that she's doing right now? Can I handle the space? And I'm really, really glad that I did. It brought some things up for me, but I'm glad that I did. Just like when we talk about writing and acting and, you know, having a hand in producing and things like that, these are all really hard tasks. Like I've produced a short film now, and it is like the job of a producer never ends. The director's job is obviously between theater and film. It's extensive. And to be able to have your hat in a ring for all of that is like, what aspects of life are shutting down for you to really cover this? Because I know that I'm, you know, again, I'm a parent too. And, you know, just being a family member and helping family and doing all these things is like, I don't know how to do all that. But to answer the question, I'm thoroughly inspired by my network, my artist friends that are right around me, Paris, Monique Robinson, Lee Edward Colston,
the second.
My bad. Let me get the second in. See, I knew him when junior. I want to say junior, but you know, Lee Edward Colston the second. James Iams and the work that he's doing as a playwright, actor, director, really inspired by these folks because this is the lane that I'm in. And they all do really great work. Like I wish I had the patience to be a writer so I could just jump in that arena and say, hey, now I'm just like the people that I'm around that I supremely admire. And I know that there are people that I'm missing off of this list, but literally the artists that are right around me, I'm most interested in and excited about and looking forward to where they go next. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So what are you working on right now? Or what are your future projects?
For me, I'm working on finishing the play that I've been writing for the past 3 years that I'm actually kind of tired of. It's my play that's supposed to be off Broadway, this fall, but earlier in the year they pushed it back to next year, which is about a pastor who condemns the victims of Pulse nightclub in Orlando and how her family and the community reacts to it. So I'm working to finish that play, which has been a thorn in my side for a while, and also another commission. I'm writing about this white theater company who, after 2020, has decided to use their next season as a season for all playwrights of color. And so they're having this meeting of what plays should be presented in this in the new theater season. So I'm having a lot of fun. Just I'm in the thinking process of this play. So those two plays I'm working on now. And after that, I am leaving my baby for a while. When I say my baby, I mean theater, because I'm going to focus on television, because that's where the money is. There is, I love theater. Theater is my heart, but you know, I've been doing theater for a very long time, and theater really doesn't pay the bill. So I'm gonna slide over into the TV room so I can you know, fund my theater habit.
Paris, the white theater company, are they going to be the ones? Okay, so they're going to give their season over to, you said people of color, black artists and other people of color?
Yeah, they are deciding what shows from people of color to do for the next season.
Oh, so
the play is about the meeting that they have to decide which shows. And of course, you know, you have the one artistic director who has been the artistic director for the past 40 years, old white guy who, you know, he's all about in diversity. You know, he has about 3 black people working for him, so it's all about diversity. And of course, the play starts with him saying, you know, we have to do the sequel to the King Headley, and he's talking about August Wilson, you know, because that's the go-to, of course. August Wilson is incredible. He's an incredible playwright.
Right.
But, you know, there's more than August Wilson when we look at the black canon of work.
Yeah, agreed. So yeah, that sounds like a comedy. That's why I was...
It is. It is.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yeah, I look forward. I'm looking forward to that. Let's see. I guess for me, it's always so interesting because I feel like I have my hat in a lot of rings, and then sometimes there's nothing going on, but I will be working with the classroom project with DSU. So that's coming up really, really shortly next week. And I have jumped back into auditioning because the thing about theater, is that it's incredibly time consuming. And I forget just how much your life is tied to it while the process is happening. So I think I'm going to take a break from theater again as well and jump back into auditioning. But I'm always like looking at, or when I can, I'm always looking at like the idea of another script to direct. So it's like, I say that, but then next year I'll be like, hey, I got this, this, and this. but I think that might be it for me. I also thought about getting into not that it's artistic related, but like I'm incredibly curious about DEI training in light of something that's happening to me as an artivist and five of my other friends, how to really approach as an artist or take it to the next level of like, how can I communicate differently for predominantly white institutions or small business owners who are white in this industry who think that they can, because of their positions, take advantage and just be really mean and racist to BIPOC artists and not understand why the grievances are what they are. So I thought about that too, like DEI training stuff and how I can incorporate that in my work. So we'll see what happens there. But beyond that, nothing super concrete other than my next 2 weeks with DSU and auditioning, which I'm looking forward to getting back to anyway, because there's some cool stuff look like it's happening and I'd like to get involved.
Yeah. Great. All right. Final question. And this one may or may not be difficult to answer. We'll see. So what are some of your artistic goals you hope to achieve in your career?
So first of all, I want to do this until the day I die. Like I said, the next goal for me is to get into the writer's room. On a television series. I eventually want to create my own television shows. And from there on to movies. And I want to have a legacy of starting the black version of Broadway. So yeah, that's for me. That's if I leave this earth and there's a one street with at least two or three black theaters on it, that means I've done my work. I've done my job. So yeah, that's what I want to leave behind.
Amen.
I don't know. I go back and forth because the actor in me is like, there are things that I have not done yet in my career that I really would like to do at some point. Like the things that they train us to do. Like I want to get on a TV show at some point. That would be cool. As a guest star, co-star, doesn't matter. I'm very humble. Series regular would be dope too. Because like Paris was saying too, that could fund my theatrical habits as well. Then I wouldn't feel like it's so time consuming and takes away from other opportunities to make money faster in the industry. I would also like to, I'm actively working on trying to get a national commercial. Inadvertently, I was in a national commercial. I feel like it's inadvertent because I don't think that they planned on it being national initially. But, things happen after like a successful campaign. After 6 months, then, you look at the contract again. You go, okay, so we're going to do this with it now. Cool. But like maybe a lead in a national commercial would be nice. I think visibility is important. I know I talked to the cast of Chains and Broken. And when we did our masterclass about like, raising your platform so you can reach more people. I think God has sent me here to do this. Because there have been times when I wanted to walk away just exhausted from the hours or the content or the combativeness with the theater folks and white theater folks. There have been times where I wanted to walk away because I haven't had my heart broken. But I think if I could fund my habit in that kind of way, it would be great. I also... Mm-hmm. In terms of a legacy, I think it's already beginning. Like I want to be the artist in anything that I do, whether that's you know, I'm acting and I'm on set, I'm acting and I'm on stage again, or if I'm producing something, that it really, or directing, that it really, it stands out. Whatever it is that I have done has made an impact, and it's almost like passing the baton, so I can pass this baton in this race of life that we're in and hand it to the next person that's younger and faster, or maybe somebody older with more endurance. And I'm just saying, hey, here you go. Here's some things that I've discovered. I also kind of want to revolutionize parenting as best I can, because there's so many different aspects to it. And you can be an artivist parent, you know, depending on how you decide to talk to your child or children about, you know, how they can better impact the community. And I often talk about like how we rear little boys and how we rear little girls, and how we can like put these ideas into a hat, pull them out, and realize that, you know what, we don't have to treat them so starkly different. And if I could be a part of some artistic work that shows that, and just shows aspects of humanity that hasn't really been fully accepted or loved on enough yet, I would love to have a legacy in that arena as well. So that would be it for me.
I just, if all of us highlight a black woman, I'll go first.
No, that's dope.
First to give you time to think about, you know, all of the amazing black women that you may want to highlight. I think I want to highlight a cousin of mine, Crystal Creighton Day. She's an inspiration. She's younger than me. She's one of the family members that I always cast in my Christmas plays. She was always the lead. But I just want to highlight her because she's pregnant with her second child, but she received a master's degree, and now she's working full time and she's also back in school. She's about to get another certificate in something, and then she's going to get a second master's, and then eventually going to get her doctorate. So I'm just proud of her. Crystal Creighton Day. It's the black woman that I want to highlight.
Yes. I am going to highlight my dear friend, my dear sister friend, Ashley Ayana. Ashley is a phenomenal human being, and is a phenomenal actor, and is currently experiencing the loss of her mother. And her loss is my loss, and a collective loss for a lot of our chosen family friends, or framly, as I call them. And she is doing the incredible task of maintaining a household with 2 to 4 kids on a given day, homeschooling, got the self-tape set up in the garage, is doing home decor, and is trying to put her mom away with the peace and the decency that mom deserved. I want to highlight and uplift Ashley Ayana. Yeah.
All right, Ashley.
Yes.
Yeah. Phew. All right. So I'm going to highlight my first acting teacher, who was a black woman. Her name is Donna Holmes. She passed away about 3-4 years ago at this point, I believe. She was in her early 50s, and there was just so much that I wanted to ask her that I never got the chance to, just because I first met her at a performing arts academy that went on during the summer, and she was my drama teacher there for 4 years. And then after that, I went to her when I was looking to audition for the performing arts high school I went to, and she helped me with that, and I'll never just forget that process. Because I auditioned with the role of Corey from Fences by August Wilson. And that was pretty much kind of like the first play that I connected to as a young black actor. And she, the ability that she had to walk me through that. And I'll just never forget her patience and her time, because she didn't have to do that. And I remember there's like so many productions that I wanted her to attend over the years, and, you know, it just never happened. So I want to highlight her because I think she deserves just the most respect in the world, just because she was brilliant, and her dedication to her craft was just beyond.
Yes. All right, black women.
So yeah. Yes. Black women all day, every day.
Every day.
That's, I like, great. To start and end with black women.
That's dope. I might snatch that. You might.
Go ahead, brother. The more you have, uplifting, you know.
Me too.
They need us.
They do. They do. And I'm so here for black women. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's dope. I love that.